It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Well, looks like it's going to be sort of a minimalist episode this week. We only got the three of us. We're going to go a little short. It'll be fine. It'll be fun. How is everybody this week?
I am just happy to be here.
Work has been hell.
Amen. This has been the longest week.
Let's try that again. How is everybody that's not muted?
Work is hell this week. I'm happy to be able to get together and chat about this stuff, but man, it's just been hell week.
I'm just happy to be here and to get to cut loose for a little bit and just, mute the phone and send the family elsewhere and just kind of get some relaxing time. It's been good. I did get a year older this week. I'm now officially 44. Yeah, thank you. I kind of hate to say it. I enjoy them, but after 40, it's all just kind of, let's just not bring attention to it. Just happy birthday and let's move on.
Yeah, but the even years are better, so.
Ticking down the clock on eternity. Yes, I got it. This was sort of it's been a really rough week for me, too. My wife had some health issues that put her in the hospital briefly, so I was the visitor instead of the patient for the first time in forever. And I got to hear how bad her experiences were, because, for the two whole days she was there versus the 90 days that I was in the intensive care.
You really had to hold yourself back, didn't you? I mean, that had to be hard.
Did you know they have bad food in the hospital? I didn't know this.
That's crazy. I can't imagine. Yeah, you're just like, baby. Yep.
Yeah, it's so terrible. Oh, I can't believe it. So I had my family down, or rather my wife's family down, helping take care of us both for a few days. And, it's been nuts. So, but I think all three of us on this podcast are now fully vaccinated, I do believe. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. I've had my second one for at least a month now, so. I'm eating out like 2-3 times a week now. I'm going to a hockey game Saturday night. I mean,
oh wow,
yeah,
hockey in Texas.
Yeah, Dallas Stars, man.
Oh, yeah, that's true. See, that's been the weird thing about for us in Mississippi is that since July, August, somewhere in there, our restaurant scene's pretty much been kind of sort of back open. There's still a number of places that were very. You can come into the place and get takeout, but you can't sit down and eat. But we've had a few restaurants that have been sit down for months and months now.
Yeah. Ours reopened at half occupancy, but we weren't eating in, until we were both fully vaccinated. And we've slowly been working our way back out and still going to places where we can eat out on the porch, if it's possible, especially since the weather has been great here lately. But it's been rather nice. And then the hockey thing, my wife lived in Columbus, Ohio for a bunch of years right out of college. It was her first job. And so they're playing the Columbus Blue Jackets and going to see that game Saturday night here. And when I bought the tickets, the Stars were still doing more of a minimal seating plan. And then this Tuesday, I get an email that says, hey, we've been granted permission to basically open it up. So we might actually be in a full or almost full arena Saturday night. So it's going to be kind of crazy.
Shoot, that'll be kind of cool.
It's the first ticket I've bought in a year. It felt weird ordering the ticket. I'm like, I'm actually on Ticketmaster doing something for the first time in over a year. And Josh, you may not know this. I know Brian does. I used to see a lot of concerts, all the time. I was forever buying tickets. And it was the first ticket I bought in a year, and it seemed really odd.
Since your wife's from the East Coast, I thought she was going to be a fan of the CAPS, 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 Caps.
Nope. She's from Philly, but then lived in Columbus. And so this I'm going to age her a little bit, but one of the reasons we're going is because one of their star players, she actually taught in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade in Columbus.
Ah.
He now plays for his – ended up getting traded back to his hometown team. And so, this would be pretty crazy.
Neat.
That's cool.
All right. Well, let's jump into it, vaccinated fellas. And and just jump on in and have some fun. So one of the things that's been dominating the news cycle for the last couple of weeks is the Epic versus Apple lawsuit, where Epic really wants to have its own in-payment system inside of Fortnite and any other game it might release for iOS. Apple, of course, is opposed to this. So it looks like for 2 years or more, Epic was planning to break the agreement that they had with Apple, which is not going to look good for Epic in court. But they've been plotting this a long time, and as everybody is sort of gathering their evidence, it came out this week that Apple dug up from when Epic was, you know, producing software, physical software for other publishers, and they took, I think, like a 60% cut when things were in stores. Apple's going to use that to say, hey, 30% is not all bad when you're looking at it from a digital marketplace, plus we have special agreements for, you know, customers that are smaller that we could take 15%. So it's looking pretty interesting. I didn't think that this would end up going to trial, but apparently Apple's not going to cave and Epic doesn't seem to want to blink, even though if I were Epic, I would just sort of take the hit. The other thing that comes out is that Epic, of course, is losing tons of money on the Epic Store. They're throwing hundreds of millions of dollars behind it. And of course, you know, probably most of our listenership knows that the Epic Store is a competitor to Steam on PCs. So if you want to buy a game from some publisher, you either... And see, this is the landscape that we have on PCs that I don't want to see on iOS. I don't like having to have GOG installed. I don't like having to have Steam installed and then have Epics and then Origin and then 500 game stores. My library scattered across. None of them share the games across platforms. So if I buy a game on Origin, it doesn't show up in Steam and vice versa. Like, I could even live with that. If they wanted to do that, I'd be okay with it. But of course, now you have this fractured marketplace and it's 10 billion places to buy software. And things used to be so much simpler when we had Steam. Everything was in one place. I could look at my library, there it was. And now I can't. Now I have, even though you have like maybe 32, 64 gigs of RAM, whatever you have in your PC, each one of these stupid stores are sitting there and they're churning up, they're taking memory. They're sending you, in the case of the Epic Store, obnoxious notifications constantly. And I'm just there for the free games, honestly, that they give away. And I think most people are too. And that's the problem. That's one of the reasons they're losing so much money.
And don't forget to add in, we have no idea what they're watching as they're running in the dock either. These, you know, 18 different
Correct.
App stores.
Yes. And it's just, it's more trouble than it's worth to me. And it's worth noting that on, you know, the PlayStation, you got to use the PlayStation Store. You're on Xbox, you have to use Microsoft's store, and they take cuts for everything as well. But apparently that's okay. That's fine because it's them. But if Apple and Google...
Well, I still think that it's a little less okay because it's them and more because Epic being... I get the impression, and I do not have the data to back it up. I need to research it and do that, you know, drop that in the next show, is that Epic is one of the biggest customers on Xbox and one of the biggest customers on PlayStation, PSN network, just as far as total revenue spent. I'm sure Epic is a huge player in those. And I'm not going to diss Fortnite and everything that it brought to the App Store, but of all the revenue coming in from the App Store, Epic was an extremely small portion of that. So where I go with that is a lot of these backdoor deals with Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony are not published. Nobody knows about them, but it is kind of the big it's the terrible secret in the industry. They will cut big deals for the big players. So I sincerely doubt Epic is having to pay 30% to Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. They're getting a much smaller cut from there.
I am not a hardcore gamer. I play a lot of Pokemon Go, and I recently bought a SteelSeries remote control so I could play some car racing games and stuff like that on my iPad, on my iPhone, and on the Apple TV.
We definitely need to talk about that, too, when you get a chance. But continue, please.
And so from my point of view, as somewhat of an outsider to the game stores, I mean, I do have a Steam account. It, you know, I haven't run it in a long time. But you know, back in the day, you know, I had a Steam account and would get some stuff on there. To me, the one thing here that just is like just this bright light that you can't ignore is what y'all are saying, which is Xbox control, you know, Microsoft controls the store on Xbox. Sony controls the store on PlayStation. How is it wrong now that Apple controls the store on their device? Just because it's not a dedicated gaming device and that there's a whole, you know, millions more of, you know, iPhones than there are Xboxes, how does that make it any different. I mean, think about Nintendo for all of these years with their devices. I mean, they're notorious for deciding who gets to even be on their systems because, you know, at least until recently, they were the cartridge company, right? I mean, you know, it wasn't even like downloads. It was like you still, you know, had to buy cartridges, which is, you know, just plain nuts these days. And so no telling how much of a cut they take on cartridge, you know, like, you know, you buy an Animal Farm cartridge, you know, what's Nintendo's take on that? You know, or, well, I guess maybe they kind of own that one too, right? But you get what I'm saying. Like it, I don't even see how this has gotten that far with, they just seem so similar to me. Like what am I missing? What is not so similar about Xbox and PlayStation?
The difference, the reason why they're not similar, in my opinion, is that Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo all went to Epic and said, hey, we'll negotiate. We'll negotiate down from that 30% to a lower percentage. And Epic said, okay, great. And Epic went to Apple and expected the exact same treatment. And Apple said, no, you'll
right,
say,
but,
we'll take
but
30% and
a,
you'll like it.
From a lawsuit perspective, how are those platforms different? I realize that they probably did the deals there, but even just ignoring that fact, just starting
they're not under any obligation to, is
right.
I think where you're looking
exactly.
for. They could have said 30 is 30, pay it or don't. It's up to you. And if they don't like it, they have no other choice.
Jim, I completely agree with you. I think that is still the biggest issue I have with the entire lawsuit is that the only there's why they're picking Apple to go after as opposed to the other three, I have no idea. But I'm not a lawyer, nowhere near it, but I see no difference. It is a completely closed ecosystem. The company in question owns the hardware, they own the software, and they own the distribution network. You have to apply to that closed ecosystem owner to get access to the platform, and you have to pay them a percentage to have your software hosted on there. That's the same basic agreement for all three of the the big console makers, and for Apple and for Google for that matter.
Well, I mean, just from a sheer numbers standpoint, I don't even know what it is, but it's at least 100 and it might be 1,000 where it's number of iPhones for every Xbox, right? I mean, I bet there's 100 iPhones in use for every Xbox and it's probably higher than that. It's, you know, it's somewhere between 100 and 1,000. And so that's the big difference here is how many bank accounts you can get to. And through the Apple Store, you can get through a whole lot of bank accounts. And through, you know, Microsoft and Sony, yes, you can get to some. And those are the more hardcore gamers that are probably spending the money. But still, you know, I think, am I right with Epic? Like the big thing is Fortnite is actually free, but then you just buy a bunch of crap inside the game. And that's how they made
yes.
all their money, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, I think that is an amazingly smart like business model. I you know, that's great. Like give the game for free and make people pay something so they can, you know, dance. But
and that's what you pay for is you pay for the funny dances, the emotes, you pay for the new skins, and you pay for different skins, different things in the game. I will say this, the art team and the marketing team that secures the licenses for what they skin at this point is the best in the business. They are the best in the world right now. The skins and the properties that Fortnite keeps cranking out on a regular basis is absolutely insane.
But that's got to cost money, right? I mean, they've got to pay for those licenses. And so depending on how many, you know, Nike hats they can sell in the game, that, you know, it makes up for the money that they actually had to pay Nike to have Nike hats in the game, right? I mean, and I just made that up.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you're right. I mean, they have to pay the content. They have to pay the IP owners to be able to use it in the system. But, you know I hadn't picked it up in ages, but the season, my son was huge into Fortnite for a while, and his old man, he carried his old man as much as he could. I did get the John Wick skin. I paid for the season and got the John Wick skin and won it. And they did a Mandalorian. They had a full Mandalorian set not too long ago. They had Kratos from the God of War series on Sony PlayStation that looked phenomenal. And they don't even have the cartoony look anymore. Some of these look just like the property. And they've done a phenomenal job with that. But yeah, the rub of the game is that the you're not paying to win. All you're paying for is cosmetics, and that's pretty much all you can do, all you can pay for. Now, what the other thing that strike me if I'm wrong, Fortnite was the first to really popularize the they call it a battle pass system, and basically the more you play, the higher level you are in the season. And your free tier, you get one little rinky-dink item about every 10 levels. But if you pay 10, 15 bucks to join up for the season, you get all kinds of extra stuff every level. And they always have something big exclusive when you hit level 100.
There's something like that for PvP and Pokemon, where you can play PvP for completely, you know, free. But you can also buy, like, passes that you win more if you win. And, you know, I think most people just play for free in general because, you know, the difference is not that great. But and the thing is, you actually have to win your matches to get the prizes. And so if you're like me and you're mostly a 50-50 player on PvP, it's not worth paying to play because then I only get about half the prizes.
Yeah, but you get the meaning here is that they do have ways to recoup that money. If you're on PC, it's free money, right? They can make 100% of it back. They're making less than 100% on every other single platform other than Apple. It seems weird that Apple and Google are the ones being singled out, but I guess they do rule the mobile space. But I think the reason in particular Apple is being targeted is because it's been known for a long time that Apple users typically tend to have a little more disposable cash. And therefore, they're more profitable. They're more like, I'm sure they have internal numbers at Epic of how many sales came from which device and who spends more. And, you know, a lot of times parents will throw the kids a phone or whatever, an iPad, and maybe they don't pay too close attention. And Junior racks up some charges and it's all good. But still, you know, 70%, if you go into an agreement knowing what the terms are, you have the option to either reject it or accept it. But what you don't really have the right to do is accept it and then violate it. So if Epic had pulled their own game from the iOS store in protest, saying that we can't afford these fees anymore, that's one thing. But to go in, slip in a version that you know violates your user agreement, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I think the courts should be less receptive to that, because if I enter a contract to buy a car or a house and I decide, you know what, I don't like the fact that they're charging me this interest rate, I'm going to stop paying them. Legally, they'll come in and repossess whatever it is that I still owe money on because I entered that agreement, agreed to do it, and then in bad faith violated said agreement. That makes me look worse. You know, that legally, I don't really have a leg to stand on because I'm not doing the thing that I agreed that I would do. So that's kind of my opinion. It's whether or not it's fair or not is completely subjective. I mean, if I was in their shoes, I'd probably feel the same way. If I was in Apple's shoes, I'd feel that was the same way. But if you enter into an agreement, you have to honor it. And if you don't want to honor it anymore, then you should terminate the agreement.
Right, that's when the courts get involved. That's why I think it's an advantage to Apple here too, is it was Epic that broke their agreement. You know, they were the ones that were in the wrong. So I think Apple had justification for kicking them out. Whereas, you know, if they would have went about it a different way, then, you know, who knows? And so answer me this. Aren't some companies actually doing their game stores inside of web browsers now to bypass that? And I think Apple's basically said that's perfectly fine. If you can run your store in Safari and people can pay in there, then go right ahead. Right?
Well, there is a kicker. There is a limitation. Because remember, Amazon ran into this early on with Apple, is that you can't link from the app to the Safari-based payment store. So you remember back in the day, Netflix used to have a thing that says, not a member, click here to sign up, and you'd go and do it. Well, now you can't do it. If you download the Netflix device, all you have is log in. You don't have sign up. If you want to go rent a movie on Prime Video, you have to go to Safari and do it. There's no way from within the
right,
Prime
Video. Like to buy a Kindle book, you can't buy it actually, you know, the way it works.
Yeah, exactly. So yes.
Some of these games can be browser-based now. Like they could literally have a game store inside the browser and play it as a browser game. Maybe Fortnite is too advanced for that, but there's other things that aren't, right? So you could literally run those straight inside the web browser.
You can, but there are limitations to those web-based apps. I mean, they've gotten a lot better. Those PWAs, as they're called, progressive web apps, they're still pretty good. But I think, and I know, not to cut Josh off because I know where he's going to go with this, is that I think Marco Arment had said that, you know, if you don't exist in the App Store, you don't exist. So while you can have those, if you can't link to them from inside the app, some users are not going to know about them. But also, it's one of the things that came out this week, and I'll try to put a link in the show notes, is that through the discovery process, you know, over on the Android store, one of the things you can do with Android is sideload apps. So you can do that. So you can go get, you know, the Fortnite app with the payment store enabled. The problem is, and their engineers at Epic, you know, were voicing concern, is that there's a lot of apps that will pose as Fortnite, the official Fortnite that you can get with a payment system installed that's going to have it, which also sort of makes the case for Apple's App Store being the single place that you get something, because you know if it comes from there that it's been vetted, or if there is a problem, you have a better chance of getting your money back, and that unofficial app isn't going to last there very long because, again, so many people use it, it's going to get reported pretty quick.
So kind of, but we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
But yeah. But that is the argument Apple will make. And it's an argument that Epic seems to, their engineers kind of agree on, is that if you're sideloading, you still can't control the integrity of what people are going to sideload, because people, there's bad actors who are going to imitate your products, and you have no control over that. And when it rips them off, they're going to blame you. They're not going to blame anyone else. To Apple's point, if that something happens, they're going to blame Apple, even though Apple has no part of it. Think about with Microsoft, with all the problems that, you know, we longtime old computer people have. You don't see it as often these days as you did in the last 10, 15, 20 years, but badly signed drivers, badly designed drivers, badly malformed third-party software that would ruin Windows, and who got the blame?
Man, I had to reinstall Windows again. Windows is so terrible. You leave it on there 3 months, then you have to reinstall because it goes unstable. Blah, 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 Microsoft.
And it really wasn't Microsoft's fault. And we knew that then, but still, it was what it was. And, you know, that's sort of the bad reputation that they garnered. And I think Apple really wants to avoid that type of situation. That's why when you see, there are some developers that shall remain nameless on Twitter who are pointing out that, hey, you've had this on the Mac for years and it's fine. What are you talking about? The Mac has never had the market penetration that iOS has. The Mac has never had the market penetration that Windows has. In short, it hasn't been a huge target for malware and hackers, not because it's so much more secure, but just because the audience wasn't worth it. You know, PCs were all the money was at, because that was like 90-something percent of the market share. And now Android and iOS are, even though Android is still way bigger in terms of user proliferation than iOS is. And that's something that Apple will point to as well, is like, hey, you know, if people don't like what we do, they can go over to Google real quick, and that looks like they have, and they have all these abilities to sideload, and if that's what, you know, suits them, go on over. You know, they have a choice. They're more popular than us. What do we care? So I think that I hope Apple kind of prevails on this on some. I don't – whether or not what they're charging is fair is up for debate, but whether or not you should be able to bypass payment processors, because I think that's really what Epic wants more than anything. It's not alternative app stores. It's to just not have to pay 30%, because even they acknowledge if that were the only sticking point, then they would be fine with people sideloading, you know, apps onto Android and just, you know, convince all their users. Because, I mean, think about it. If that was something that was great, go into put something in Fortnite where Apple is no longer cool, and have characters that say things, you should go to Android or whatever. I don't play Fortnite. I'm a grown man. But still.
I'm a man. I'm 40. No.
I'm old and we like it. But you get what I'm saying. There are alternatives that you can do that have nothing to do with iOS, and Epic could push those pretty hard on their impressionable audience. But again, this is not about alternative app stores. It's we don't want to pay the money that we agreed to pay.
Well, and Epic tried that for what, about 2 to 3 weeks? And everybody just kind of looked at him and said, that is the lamest junk ever. And they kind of quietly stopped all that. You know, they had the big 1980 Fortnite deal and all this other stuff. And it lasted for about 2 weeks and they kept on. And they're like, dude, you're acting like a jilted ex-girlfriend in high school. What the heck? And they kind of quietly stopped all of it.
But also, if I'm a user and I'm paying, let's say, $20 for a skin, $19.99, the prices don't go down for me if I pay Epic directly versus Apple directly.
Absolutely.
So what do
not.
I care? I have no stake in this. And if I think the conditions of the App Store says you're not supposed to be able to charge iOS users more than what you charge. But I know certain people do. I know Spotify does it.
Do they still do that with Spotify?
I don't know. I always end up, if I want Spotify, I buy the $100 gift card from wherever, and then just apply it, and you can get $120 worth of Spotify for $100, like for a year. So it's, there's a loophole where you can get around that, but I think Spotify still does that, where they would charge more. There for a while, when they allowed in-app subscriptions, they charged you, I think, $12.95 or $14.95 through the app, but it was $9.95 if you went to the website, which, again, I don't know how they got away with that for as long as they did, because I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that. It's supposed to be flat pricing across the board. But again, as a user, I have no stake in this, so I wouldn't care who I was paying. It wouldn't be something that would sway me to change platforms.
So I'll have to find a link for it, and we can put it in the show notes. But I saw a story this past weekend that said 88% of teens own an iPhone. So that right there tells you why Epic wants to be on an iPhone, on iOS, and why they want to, you know, make the bigger profits than they should be able to. But I mean, it's Apple's hardware that's delivering this audience to them. They didn't put all the R&D into iPhones and all the work into the software and the hardware and the advertising and that basically it was Apple's work that made it so 88% of teens want an iPhone or have an iPhone. So, pay the piper here. It seems kind of, part of me is like, if I say Epic seems greedy here, people say, well, Apple's trying to take 30% for doing nothing. But no, Apple has done a lot to get here. And so I think Epic can make plenty of money without the 30%.
Well, not just that, but to compare to the retail physical world, if you want premier product placement inside of a Walmart or Target or Walgreens or whatever, you pay for it. You know, if you want to be on an end cap, if you want to do this, and you pay fees to be featured in a store. You know, you go into a big box retailer and they don't just have every manufacturer under the sun. You have to strike deals with certain manufacturers to get your products on shelves. And that involves a cut of sales. That involves, I think when Fry's went under, they were just, flat out paying for merchandise to be there. And if it didn't sell, then they would ship it back, which apparently is not how you do things in retail. And that's one of the reasons that they went under. So, if you move to that type of model, you're kind of screwed. But these other retailers that do this sort of thing, and again, going back to the days of retail when Epic was in part of that, you charge these ludicrous, seemingly ludicrous. I mean, 60% is a huge take for quote unquote doing nothing. But, they themselves are used to this. They know this. I'm sure in their Epic Game Store, when they're putting other companies' games up for sale or any games, they're taking a cut. So it just seems sort of specious and selective to go, well, we're entitled to do this, and we've done this throughout our history, and we know that what we did provided a value for the people we were selling things for, but what you guys do is no value. Like, that iPhone is a status symbol to teens. Teens have disposable income, especially iPhone-wielding teens, apparently. And I think as part of this this thing, they talked about how iMessage is a lock-in. Well, of course iMessage is a lock-in. I can't even understand why that was really a controversial thing. They have something that people want. It benefits them to keep it on their own platform instead of porting it everywhere. So that's what they do. Because why? Because they can, and people will pay. And that's completely legal and fine and expected. It would be dumb. It would be like Epic saying, you know what? We're going to open source Fortnite or something like that. Like, why would you do something? If this is your hook to get people coming in, then yeah, you're allowed to do that and it's okay. And they talk about, well, interoperability. Yeah, you can text people on Android. They don't support RCS and they don't have to. They're not having to keep up with standards that they didn't create. Microsoft did this for decades of, oh, that's a nice protocol you got there. We're going to take it and extend it, and this is what we're going to do for our customers. So, but that also acts as a motivator. If you're in a text chain with 10 other people and 9 of you have iPhones, that one dude with the Android phone is bringing everybody else down because you can't leave the conversation.
Yeah, screw you, green text guy.
Exactly. So all the things that you can't do now because of this.
I mean, as an example, how many times now you go to a website and they go, best on Chrome, because basically, they've done things a certain way and, with Google and Chrome, and they've got their percentage so high that, they can kind of just force people's hand, and that kind of stinks.
But it is what it is in most cases. And I hate that more than anybody. I like using just one browser across platforms, but I don't trust Google. Edge works pretty good. Edge does most of what it needs to do, but a lot of the extensions that are written for Chrome don't quite work the way they're supposed to.
Right. I use Safari and Edge on my Mac, so.
Your dog loves coming in the room when you podcast, like absolutely every time.
Yeah, well, she just happened to hit that note when I hit unshush.
Always. So, Josh, I know you have some stuff to say on this.
Well, going back to the PWAs, I know that it's one thing that Microsoft is looking at with their xCloud, where it's basically the streaming of Xbox games in the cloud. And, you know, Apple's big thing with it was, well, if you're doing 100 games, you need to submit each game individually. And again, it's Apple's ecosystem. They can do what they want. I know they've released it on Android. They're looking at doing a PWA version of the xCloud stuff. And you are starting to see, you know, you're starting to see it kind of go back to that PWA, which is kind of ironic because, you know, with the original OG iPhone, you know, Steve Jobs is like, make web apps. It's the way of the future. And then it's like, well, no, here's the App Store. We want native stuff. You know, as a gamer who has a PC, a PC, a PS4, an Xbox One, and there are more Switches in this household than I feel comfortable mentioning right now. On my PC, I've got my Steam account. I actually just looked it up where I have 398 games purchased on Steam. And none of those are really free-to-play ones. I think Path of Exile, and that's about it. On the Epic Game Store, I have purchased 3 games over the whole time I've had it. It's been Tetris Effect for my VR headset. It's been the Tony Hawk 1 and 2, and it's been Star Wars Squadrons. Every other game I've purchased on Epic Game Store has either been a free-to-play game like Fortnite, or it's been one of their free games of the week that Epic has basically thrown a ton of money to go, hey, look at us, buy stuff from us and download our store and please use us. Don't use Steam, use us instead. And I'm not mad at them for that. They're trying to get market share, you know, and they can spend a whole bunch of money on advertising, or they can buy up a bunch of games and give them away. I kind of like that option. I've gotten some really good free games out of it. But the problem is that the Epic Game Store is really kind of terrible. And Steam in the early years was not good. Steam had a lot of issues. There was a lot of people, you know, oh, well, what happens when this goes away? What happens to my games? And Steam, to their credit, has withstood the test of time. They've had some rocky waters, but they've done a real good job of building it up, building their users' trust, and making their client better and better and better over the years. And it's been very rock solid, and it's a solid place to handle everything with. EA Origin is terrible. GOG's not bad, but again, they've kind of got some little cheap games. I think they did a re-release of the first Diablo. Activision Blizzard's another offender. Battle.net has been around for ages and ages. And if you want to play one of the few games Blizzard does, you've got to have that. There's no other way around it. I like the Apple ecosystem. You know, you brought up what you said about the Mac. Well, the Mac's been doing it this way for years. The iPhone was built from the ground up to be different. You know, the Mac started as an open, I say open in the sense of file sharing, restricted user spaces, file systems, et cetera, et cetera. And the Mac has always been a very open platform, just like Windows. It's been a lot more controlled than Windows, but at the core, it's still kind of sort of the same. They moved to a Unix-based system with OS X, and over the years, that helped them out tremendously with security, in my opinion. And then over the years, they've gotten more and more in like they did with iOS. When iOS came out, it was completely locked down. No apps can talk to each other. You know, it wasn't until the engineer, you know, different programmers figured out the X callback URL trick to bounce stuff between apps. That was the first time you could share stuff between apps on an iPhone. It was locked down on purpose. And
I'm sorry, I just have to butt in here and just say I'm really sitting here just laughing when you said it's a Unix-based system. It just makes me think of Jurassic Park. I'm sorry.
It's Unix. I know this. Right. iOS, it's not perfect anymore, but I do still think it's by and large head and shoulders above everything else out there. I'll even go so far as to say on any computing platform. You know, if I had to do all my work on one platform and one platform only, at gunpoint, I probably would choose iOS. You know, it would mean, well, I can't podcast anymore without investing in hundreds of dollars of extra equipment. But, you know, it's the best thing out there, in my opinion. I really think that. And I think that if Epic does win, you're going to see it change and you're going to see a lot of the niceties we have in the system. It's going to go away. And it's not going to be overnight, but over time it's going to degrade down. And a lot of the things that we love about iOS is going to go away. As far as a corporate standpoint, it's two large corporations that are fighting over millions and billions of dollars. I'm I'm not really upset at either. You know, they're both corporations. They're not doing this for the love of the people or for the good of the country. They're doing it for their own damn wallets. And at the end of the day, that is what it is. I ain't mad at either of them, but neither one of them are championing anything with this. They're championing their own shareholders. That's what they're doing. And at the end of the day, it's if they're going to trial over breach of agreement, then yes, that's pretty cut and dry. If they're going to trial over this is unfair and I don't like that Mikey's not sharing his cookies with the rest of us and Judge Jones, you need to force Mikey to share his cookies with all of us, you don't go to court for that. You just don't.
Well, that's what they're going to try and do. But so let's, switching gears for just a minute, let's talk about the App Store itself. So Apple's key argument, and I kind of agree with them here as somebody who has to support multiple members of their family, is that if they allow multiple app stores, they can't guarantee the integrity of the system, which is true. If you're allowing software from anywhere with no sort of vetting process, it may be fine, it may not, but you won't know until the sort of the horse is out of the barn, as they say, you know, once the damage is done. Things being controlled through the App Store, when they find a problem, you have a chance of getting your money back, you have getting refunds, you have a chance, you know, that app that's the offending app will be pulled, and they can even, I'm pretty sure, nuke those apps from orbit so that if you've already downloaded them, they can take them away if they're really malicious or really problematic.
They nuked Fortnite.
Well, did they nuke Fortnite or did they, you just couldn't update it? So like once they removed it, you still had it on your phone. You could still play.
Yeah, you could still play. Yeah.
Because that's usually the way that they do it. Now, I don't know if they nuked the one that allowed you to have the payment processing in it or not, but I could understand if they did, because that was a clear and in deliberate violation of the user agreement. It wasn't like, oh, this is a bug we didn't intend to. This was, we're going to do this anyway, and what are you going to do about it?
Also, with respect to the App Store, I mean, apps are cheap. I'm just going to say it. Like, iOS apps for iPhone and iPad are cheap. Like, a lot cheaper than Mac counterparts or PC counterparts. I mean, they're just, you know, in general, they're just cheap. And not cheap in like bad cheap. Cheap as in just not as much money. You know, they're quality apps. And so I don't know. I really like the App Store because of that. And I think one of the reasons that apps are cheap is, I mean, things did kind of work their way down to that level. But it's also because the market is so big, because there are so many iOS devices, you know, they don't have to charge $30 for an app like they do on the Mac. They can charge $5 or $3 or whatever it is on iOS. And I mean, that's one of the reasons I love the App Store. And, you know, and I think we all benefit from it being what it is. And, you know, that's why, behind Apple here, I think they deserve the cut because they built the system that runs it. They put all the work into it. You know, I don't know. It makes sense to me that they should be able to charge some sort of fee for you to operate on their system. And if 30%, maybe some people think 30% is too high. You know, if you think 30% is too high, then charge more for your app.
Well, not only that, but you think about games on this platform and games on PC. Microtransactions have been the bread and butter of the game industry. And I hate it. Most users hate it for the last few years. But whether it's on PC, whether it's on iOS, whether it's on Xbox, it's just a fact of life. You know, even Microsoft engages in that because you can go and you can pay, or at least in the past you could, for, and I did this a couple of times, I'd buy like the, hey, I want to make my avatar look like Rick from The Walking Dead, and I had to pay $1 or something like that, or whatever it was, to be able to do that. So they've been in on this for a long time too. They're no different than any other vendor that's on the market, whether it's Sony, whether it's Microsoft, whether it's Google. They all do this, and, you know, good for them. I think they should be able to do it. I just don't understand why, you know, if you don't like it, you build your own, I guess, is the thing that, you know, we typically tend to say. But moving back to your point for just a moment, the cost of the software going down, that's why a lot of these things are free to play, because if you charge, let's say, $20 for a game, and that's the only $20 you may ever make on that game, but if you give the game away and keep offering, you know, microtransactions for skins or weapons or dances or whatever, you could presumably milk those customers forever who are willing to pay it. And even if you're losing 30% as part of that transaction, you get enough content in there and people will continuously buy it. You're still getting money hand over fist.
It's just the cost of doing business. Just no different than if you wanted to go put physical media inside of Target or Best Buy or anywhere else, you're going to have to share a cut with the store. And if you want premium placement, if you want the end caps, if you want the advertising in store, if you want the employees to push the product, you know, it's, you have to pay for that. Nothing is free. This is the way that capitalism works. And they act like they don't know that, that they are ignorant to how all of this works, even though this is how they themselves profited in the 90s as a hardware, I mean, as a distributor of physical media.
They fully understand the rules. They're just on the wrong side of it right now. And so they're crying wolf.
So let's talk about the App Store for a quick second. So one of the arguments that Apple has is that the App Store is their way of maintaining security on the platform. And I would tend to agree to that for the most part. Josh, you have a counterpoint to that, though, right? So why don't you get into it?
I'm still kind of a shade tree programmer and have aspirations of finally releasing an iOS app one day. So there's a bunch of developers I follow on Twitter. And Steve Troughton Smith is one of the ones that's been very vocal, not quite anti-Apple. That's kind of the wrong way to go. But he's been very much pro-Epic in a lot of the arguments for the trial. And there is another developer that I'm too Southern and too white to even try to mention that name. I'm going to butcher it, so I'm just going to call him by his first name, Costa. He has been finding different scam apps that have survived very, very long times on the App Store. And, you know, one of the things, Brian, that me and you have been talking about is you're correct. There are, what, millions upon millions of apps on the App Store. And every app does have to undergo an approval process to get in the App Store. So if you have a small scam app that looks like a six-year-old's version of Fortnite that you get in and it's a $50 a year subscription, that's not, it's scummy and it is kind of a scam, but it's not, it's just a bad product. And you can kind of go, that's, you get into something like that, and that's kind of a, well, you know, do you curate it because it's a bad product? Or, yeah, no, well, no, that you get real shades of gray with that.
Yeah, I mean, you could go buy some Dr. Thunder, and it's super cheap, and it don't compare with Dr. Pepper. And I don't even really like Dr. Pepper. I just know the reference to Dr. Thunder. And so, like, you could go buy some super cheap Dr. Thunder, and it's a knockoff of Dr. Pepper, but that doesn't mean you don't sell the doctor. You know, somebody's going to sell the Dr. Thunder.
Somebody is going to buy it, and we know that somebody.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
But one of the things that Tim Cook has come out in the a lot of the pre-arguments and interviews leading up to this trial is he has talked, you know, we do such a, we believe that heavy curation and, you know, we do a thorough vetting of all these applications and watch all this. And this Mr. Costa has been going into deep dives on Twitter and talking about a lot of these different things and showing full examples. And these are not these are not apps that have been in the App Store a month or two. These are apps that have been in the store, in some of these cases, well over a year. They're VPN scam apps that are, you know, just absolutely, they claim to be a VPN, but that they never really kind of connect.
So about these scam VPN apps, I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been thinking, so how does this sort of stuff get through? How does it live there? First of all, in their pretrial notes or depositions they're giving, I think Tim Cook has said that they get 100,000 apps a week and they reject 40,000 a week, roughly. That is a lot. If you have a subscription-based service for something, let's say a VPN, people like us know that there's a certain amount you should pay for that. It's usually monthly or yearly and roughly what it should cost. That is not to say, and I'm not defending this, but I do want to explain it. If I'm
Apple
and if some developer comes through and they say, hey, I want to charge a weekly cost, a monthly cost, and a yearly cost for this service. Just reviewing the app, if the app appears to pass the review process where it looks like it, you know, it's a client, it uses these network calls, it does this, 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 and this, and they want to charge a weekly subscription. If somebody's willing to pay it, that technically doesn't violate the terms of the App Store. It is scummy. It shouldn't exist. I want it gone. I would hate for my parents to fall for that. But from a purely retail perspective, I could see where it would fall through until enough people complain about it.
It's the I am rich argument. You know, those of us that
there's a lot of really crappy games.
right.
The app store.
Well, you remember one of the first
but
apps.
Somebody to, might like them.
You know, back with the Beer Me and then the little fart app and the Flick Your Bic Lighter on the early days of the iPhone, you also had the I Am Rich app. And it was an app that cost $1,000 on the App Store, and it did absolutely nothing other than just show, hey, I'm rich and I've got money to burn. It's a scummy app. It did absolutely nothing. But was that an illegal app? No, it was just, if you want to be dumb enough to give this person $1,000, by all means, knock yourself out.
Right. I agree here. They can't curate for quality, right? Because what I think is a really crappy game, somebody else might really like spending hours playing it, you know, like, and, you know, I've downloaded plenty of apps where I'm like, man, this is awful. And then I delete it and, you know, but somebody might like the reason I downloaded it is probably because I saw somewhere that somebody else recommended it. If it does basically what it's supposed to do, I mean, I think there should be some policing for fake apps, like basically like a Pokemon app that's not actually the Pokemon app or things like that where it's, you know, somebody puts a fake Pac-Man app in the, you know, game in there that uses IP or, you know, stuff like that, then you got to take it down. But, you know, if somebody just has a crappy game where all you get to do is, you know, walk around and, you know, literally just walk around in some, you know, fake world, you know, somebody might actually like that. I mean, isn't that what, you know, like that game that Syracuse likes where you just walk around in the fake world, right?
Well, Destiny 2 or whatever.
No, Journey's a little more than that, but that's for another episode.
Or make it so that they can't game the review system. So when you go to the top charts in the App Store, you see the ones that float to the top. You should be able to search for VPN and find the most popular VPN and not have it be written by some guy sitting in the middle of nowhere who's just collecting, you know, scam money. That is an argument I would give you that they should be able to do that. Maybe make it so that you can't review an app until you've spent X number of dollars in the App Store, or your account has to be more than a year old. There are things you could do to fight that, I'm pretty sure.
Right. Well, and, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to say that an app that falls in the, I'm not even going to attempt to try to grab user counts. Let's say it falls in the bottom 5% of users in an app. Okay. You know, as far as it ain't Facebook, it ain't Snapchat. It's we're talking bottom tier app here. I'm not saying that Apple should take a guy, an engineer or a reviewer, and have him spend 5 hours trying to reverse code this thing. But the first app, the first VPN app that I talked about in the chat, made $5 million of revenue in a year. And if you looked past the first 5 or 6 reviews, you start seeing one star after one star after one star after one star after one star review. This app does not do what it says it did. It told me it was a 7-day trial, then it was a 1-day trial, then it started charging me $25 a week. I didn't sign up for that. I tried to cancel it. I can't figure out where to cancel it from. And I know that's one of the other things that Apple has talked about is that they've tried to make it subscription canceling much easier. Now, I'm not 100% sure on this. Y'all correct me if I'm wrong. Any app that has a subscription, I can go into the App Store settings or on my settings on my iPhone, go to subscriptions and get rid of it there. The three of us know it. Brad and Jason know it. Power users do know that. My mom probably wouldn't have a friggin' clue how to undo the subscription other than inside the app. Is that something that, again, you know, kind of like they went through and they changed it to where you can't harass people for reviews all the time. You have to do it in a specific way. They standardized that. That's a good thing. Brian, to your point exactly, buying reviews is a terrible problem right now. And I don't know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know how to fix it, but it's something they've got to fix. This VPN app, Mr. Costa went through and figured up using... Apple doesn't give you full results, but there are websites out there that try to postulate how successful an app is overall. This would have been like it was in the top 350 apps as far as revenue earned in the last 12 months. And there was a largely disproportionate number of one-star reviews. All the reviews talked about obscene subscriptions. The app didn't work right. They couldn't get the subscriptions canceled. And I find it very hard to believe that Apple could not set up some type of a flag and take a small handful of testers a year, and their whole job is vetting already existing apps on the store and going, has this app changed from when we first approved it? Because again, Brian, to your credit, there have been plenty of instances. I remember there was a couple of other apps that one was like a simple note-taking app. And the guy published it. And he published, you know, version 1.0, and he did two or three updates. Well, then he did another update that was a bigger update. And then all of a sudden it leaked out, hey, if you make a note and you do this exact set of instructions, you unlock an Easter egg that is a Game Boy Advance emulator. And you can put ROMs in your files, Dale, and you can, it's a GBA emulator. That's nothing Apple has ever wanted to allow in the App Store. And this guy kind of gamed the system to where he hid it in there. You had to know the Easter eggs to unlock, but it worked. As soon as it went public and everybody caught wind of it, Apple yanked it right off the store. You can't sit here as the CEO, in my opinion, and try to toot your own trumpet and go, we are awesome. We do a great job of this curating. And yet you've got an app that made $5 million last year that doesn't do what it's supposed to do, that they're buying reviews and they're gaming the system on the App Store. Now, this guy is, you know, he's pulling out, he tweets a new one about once a week and goes and finds one. Now, this one is one that I will agree is a bit of an edge case. The one that he tweeted about a couple of days ago. You find this app in the App Store and it's like a Temple Run game for children 4 and up. And me and you download it, Jim, it's exactly what you talk about. It's like a 5-year-old's drawing with clip art and stock art of a Infinity Runner game. But if you throw your VPN into Turkey, all of a sudden it's an online casino that takes payments online and completely bypasses Apple's IAP. It completely bypasses. It's in all kinds of violations. And the app, and you go and read the reviews, and there's all kind of people in the reviews talking about it's taking all my money from all this stuff, and they're running a crooked casino out of it and taking everybody to the bank.
Oh, bull! Like people, if they got themselves in there, then they know damn well what they're doing,
right?
And they didn't win at the casino. That's their own damn fault. Like that, you can't have it both ways here, people. And I mean, he finds one app a week. Do you know how many thousands of apps there are?
Yeah, when you're pointing out single apps.
Apple, if they could clean it out, if Apple could clean out every bad app, they would. Because to me, the bad press that they get from stuff like this is infinitely worse to their bottom line than any amount of money that they make off of them. Because the money they make off these scam apps, it might be a lot to one person, but it's not a lot to Apple. Like in the aggregate, it's not a lot to Apple, period. So, I mean, I just think that, Brian, you mentioned something on Telegram the other day about the epic, like the size problem. Like if you hit a certain size and it just becomes infinitely harder to do some of these things. And even if you're Apple, it becomes infinitely hard to do these things. It's like Google trying to stop people from uploading bad stuff to YouTube. I saw some number about there's like, you know, 100 years worth of video uploaded to YouTube every 10 seconds or some stupid number like that. I mean, it's like it's impossible for somebody to watch every minute of every video like that gets uploaded to YouTube. They can't monitor it, period.
We're dealing with a scale that has never been
right
dealt with in all of human history and is impossible for us to do. I mean, it's a wonder it's as good as it is.
So, I mean, yes, I think if they could stop these apps, they would. But to our point earlier, there's a difference between being a crappy app and being a scammy app. I mean, the scam stuff, they should maybe work a little harder to try to get rid of if they can find it. But the bad apps are just bad apps.
You're correct. Scale is a problem. And, you know, Brian, like we discussed and argued earlier in the week, I do concede Apple's not being blinded by the money. In the grand scheme of things, the $5 million that app earned is the quick math, $1.5 million they made off of that. Like you said, the bad press that they're getting from that, you're right. After thinking about it at a top executive level, they could care less about that. They really could. But if this app is one of the top 350, top 500 earners for a year, they're not going to look over those apps with a little more scrutiny. You know, it's, You mentioned Destiny 2 earlier, and over the last couple of years, I've quit playing it, but I've logged probably more hours in Destiny 2 than any other video game I've ever played. I don't want to mention the hundreds of hours I've spent in this. They had a very competitive player versus player mode, 3-on-3, that only ran on the weekends, called Trials. And the problem on the old video game consoles is that they did not pay for their own servers. Normally, these games will have dedicated servers that everybody joins to, and that's where the game is hosted. Bungie got cheap, and Bungie did peer-to-peer serving. So one of the six players in the game was the host. So everybody could see everybody else's addresses, IP addresses. Well, Bungie also they were one of the first big games like that to have an API that they'd let people go to town with. And so you had all kinds of tracker systems online that would track your stats and your success rates and everything else. Well, cheaters abounded. And what these cheaters would do is as soon as you logged in, because it's peer-to-peer hosted, they could see everybody else's IP addresses. Well, they DDoS attack them. It's a competitive game. They drop out. The other team wins by default. And the big thing of Trials is that if you win 9 games in a row without losing, you make it to the Lighthouse. And you get better loot than you can find anywhere else in the game. Well, these people would look online, and you would find these people that they've gone to the Lighthouse. They've gone 9-0 10 times in a row, and they've had 5 kills in 90 matches because, conveniently, everybody they go up against lags out and gets DDoS'd, and they just magically lose their connection.
It's an arms race. It's never ending.
The thing with that drove me nuts about it is that you're a huge company. Bungie employed 800, 900 people. Apple employs far more than that. And maybe it's because I do analytics and statistics for a living in my job. But for God's sakes, can't you automate a report that instead of trying to monitor 20 million players, you can look and go, well, that looks like suspicious behavior. I'm going to run a report, and over the last month, instead of looking at 20 million accounts, I've got 5,000 accounts here that look like they've done suspicious behavior. You take the time, somebody can go through them, it takes them a week to look at them, and you ban them all. You know, if this is a bad app, these scam apps, I find it hard to believe. Now, granted, I don't know that Apple's going to automate a VPN to Turkey. That's a little specific in a lot of ways. But, you know, and that's, I'm not going to lie, that's a little creative. I'm not even mad. I'm impressed.
Yeah, yeah, I was just about to say, that's pretty brilliant.
That's pretty brilliant in a lot of ways. But that one I can see. That's a weird one that I don't really know how to check. You know, to have Apple do a unit test to VPN as every possible country in the world, that's a little weird. That's a little much. But I find it extremely hard to believe that there's no process in Apple that these type of scam VPN apps do not raise a red flag due to number of one-star reviews, due to outlier larger than normal subscription rates, due to, you know, heavier cancellation of subscription rates, due to heavier complaints of support tickets of this app is charging me, why is it doing that? I find it very hard to believe that this app over the course of a year did not raise a red flag somewhere in Apple if they claim to be this great at curation. And I will concede they are the best in the world right now at curation. There is no better place online than the App Store. There is no safer place to get to buy apps than the App Store. They do a good job. They do an exceedingly good job considering the scale that they're having to deal with. But an app of that magnitude that's made that much money, that's been around for that long, I just find it very hard to believe that didn't raise a red flag, that didn't throw a trigger in a report somewhere that somebody hasn't been forced to look at within Apple.
They could do AI like the credit card companies do when they detect fraud, I think would probably be the better way to handle that. If it were me, I would look at the things, the apps that were behind the most chargebacks, for example, of customers getting so irate that they call the credit card company and say, I did not authorize this. I'm not supporting this. Now, granted, the thing with one-star reviews is you can review bomb. People do that all the time. One of the podcasts that I'm so fond of listening to called Who Are These Podcasts encourages people to give them 5-star reviews, but then talk complete crap about them and say how horrible they are in the comments. So, you know, it would be hard to tell if you were going off the content of comments. Now, maybe you look at the stars itself, maybe you look at what people are saying, but those things are also easily manipulatable in a way that would make it very difficult to see it. I think the chargebacks or putting scrutiny under developers that are in the top 500. If you generate this and, you know, I see it's coming from a reputable game dealer, I don't care. But if it's some small developer I've never seen before, then maybe I have some scrutiny on that just to make sure things are on the up and up. But again, 60,000 apps a week are coming in. Well, 100,000, 60 are the ones that get approved. So it will get better. Now, if every other app in the App Store was a scam VPN app, then yeah, I'd be right there with you.
I was just going to say, we've all used Siri, Brian. We know Apple can't do AI.
They've bought up every company that does. That's even worse. So, yeah, I think we're getting over an hour here, so we may want to move on to some other stuff.
This will be a good
debate for another time as well. I do want to get to one quick thing before our last segment. Let's talk about Jim going full Amazon, his downward trajectory into full Amazon that I put in the show notes. What the hell is wrong with you, Jim?
So I bought a new pair of AirPod Pros because the dog ate one of my regular AirPods again. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back on the Pro circuit. And I have had better luck with them this time as far as the sound. I don't know, whatever. Like, I'm getting a better seal. You know, it's still not perfect, and they kind of loosen up a little bit on me. But they're fine in that respect. The problem with them now is that my AirPods will not remember their settings. So it's always left ear and right ear are both to the noise cancellation setting, and it's not all three of them. It's just two of them. It's either just open or noise canceling, not the just off one. And so I can set it, and then I really don't have a pattern of if I put them back in the case or if I use them with another device. It just basically never saves itself. And I've checked my Mac, my iPad, and my phone, you know, like at the same time to make sure they were all set to the same thing to where nothing's changing them. And it still gets reset. And I found posts on Reddit where people are complaining about the same thing. So I bought them from Amazon when they were on sale for $199. And so I'm returning them to Amazon, and they're shipping me another pair, which will actually be here tomorrow. So they were telling me that it was going to be a month, but it's actually going to be here tomorrow. And so basically I'm cross-shipping. So that way I'm not without my AirPods at all. What Brian is referring to is yesterday Amazon announced a new version of the Echo Pods, or I actually forget exactly what they called them. We can put a link in the show notes. But they've got a marked, you know, way down right now, like $120 for the noise canceling wireless case version. And so I figured, why not? You know, I mean, I actually really do like Amazon's lady quite a lot. I'm not going to say her name. And so what if I have that in my ears, you know, tied back to my phone, and I can actually use that everywhere? You know, I use that a lot more than I do Siri. So I figured I'd give them a shot for that price, and, you know, it'd be good fodder for the podcast. So I'm kind of pitching in $120 so we can talk about them here, sort of thing.
Bezos's boy.
I'm not going to give any flack over that. If they work good, I'm here for it.
I got to figure the Bluetooth stuff won't be as seamless as the W1 or the H1, right, or whatever they're calling the chip in the AirPods. So.
And they're black instead of being white. So I was like, hey, I can have a little, you know, black. And it won't look like I have a Q-tip in my ear. It'll just look like I have something else in my ear.
Like gauges in your ear.
So they don't actually ship until at some point in May, like they announced them yesterday. But they're offering, you know, some $30-$40 off the regular price right now. And even at that price, they're kind of a loss leader versus what you would pay for like a, you know, AirPods Pro or something. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I don't expect them to sound as good as the AirPods Pro do, but, you know, we'll try it out. I'll give it a shot. You know, like I said, I figured it'd be good fodder for the podcast and walk around and, you know, discuss life with Amazon's lady. Then, you know, I enjoy that.
We'll have to see how that goes as your descent into madness continues. So next week, next Tuesday, 4/20/4/20/4/20 is the big Apple announcement where we're expected to see iPad Pros and maybe a new Apple Pencil, maybe the Tile competitor for the tracking called AirTags. Are you guys excited for the 4/20 event?
Absolutely. It's another Apple Christmas.
I am, but man, I want a new Apple TV. My remote finally died and for my Apple TV, but I don't want to buy a new one. It died by actually one of the the down button. It like got stuck in down. So the only way I was actually able to stop it was I had to like come in my room and wrap it, like bring it to a different room of the house and wrap it up so that the Wi-Fi signal could not reach the Apple TV in the living room. There's no way to disconnect an Apple, like a Apple TV remote from the Apple TV. So I had to like hide it somewhere to where the TV couldn't get the signal, or it just was like, everything was just down, 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 down. Yeah.
I swear to God, you have the weirdest like edge case situations of anybody.
Well, I spilled something
years.
On this one like a couple of months back. This was completely my fault.
You always pour Mountain Dew on everything.
It got dunked in Coke or something. Yeah, it got dunked in Coke or something. So it was already kind of mushy, sticky, and it finally just decided, to be stuck.
In his defense, the remote is pretty terrible.
Don't even have any kids, and he has kid damage on all this stuff.
I am a big kid, Brian.
I know.
I mean, I'm just going to admit it right here.
Roku did announce a new remote this week that has a dedicated Apple TV Plus button on it.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I spent the $30. I ordered the TV remote, the new Roku remote, and I may just use that on my 4K streaming stick because I can tell where the Apple TV button is in the dark without having to look down, and I know which way the remote is. So I feel your pain. It's not like it doesn't suck, but...
So I have been using the function, Josh. I'm getting more used to pointing it at the TV now. Like, before I... The bad thing with that one is I'd pick it up and I'd hit like three things and be like, oh, nothing happened. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to point it at the TV. And so now that that's all I use, or, I'm using my phone too, but now that I use it all the time, every night, I'm getting more used to having to point it to the TV. So, and it does really well for skipping commercials, much better than using the Apple TV remote. So there is that.
But I have to ask, I could not tell you the last time I used a physical remote on any of our Apple TVs, because I will just grab my phone and go down to Control Center, and right there on Control Center, I have my little quick for the remote. That's what I use on every Apple TV in the house.
I do that too, but also I'm playing Pokemon on my phone, so it's actually in my hand, and I still, I find it's hard to fast forward through commercials and do some of that kind of stuff.
Hey, Mr. I Love Echo, you do know that Siri can actually open apps on the Apple TV, right? So you can say something, Siri, open the Netflix app on the Apple TV, and it will do it. Or you can say, play such and such on the Apple TV, and most of the time it works, depending on if you own it.
No, I haven't done that.
You can also tell it to fast forward 30 seconds or 60 seconds.
Yeah, I have done that.
You're willing to do that with your side piece Alexa over there, but you won't do it with your main squeeze Siri. I got you. I see how it is.
Well, I mean, to his defense, Siri might try to order him some garlic bread from somewhere or something.
No. Hey, out of all of you Amazon losers, I'm the one that uses this Siri stuff the most. I can tell you it does work pretty reliably. During college football season, when I'm not sure what channel the game is on, I just tell the Apple TV to tune into whatever game it is that I want to watch. It opens the app, it goes to the game, and it turns it on, and I don't have to even worry about what channel it is. If it looks in my AT&T TV to see if it's on there, or it goes through the ESPN app and their various substations that they have, but it just works. I just tell it, hey, I want to watch this game. Boom, does it. And it's like, I don't have to futz with the remote. I don't have to, go and Google, is it on SEC Network? Is it on ABC? Is it on this or that? It just does it. I think it does more than what you guys give it credit for.
Oh,
so
it absolutely does. I agree.
It absolutely does. I agree. Yeah.
But I'll also say that, while I've got my garage door hooked up through Siri as well, half the time when I'm walking out to my car, it works. Half the time, I have to walk back and punch in the keypad to close the garage door. When I pull up in the evenings...
Are you using a Homebridge plugin, or are you using the native
one? It's not a Homebridge issue. It's a Siri issue. It's Siri doesn't understand what I'm telling
it. I have the Chamberlain stuff, and I've used it since it came out. And the only error that I ever get with it is that it says it can't complete the request, but it actually does. So like I'll say, open the garage, and it'll say, I tried, and I see the garage door opening, and I get the notification that it opened. Which I can live with, but I don't know what it is you've done, but in my house, that crap always works. Now, if you have multiple houses in Siri, sometimes it'll go, you do want to open it in this house, right? And I'm like, yeah, this house, not my parents' house. And then it does it, even though my parents don't have a garage door in their house, so it shouldn't happen. So there are problems with it, but not like the ones, like the stuff I'm hearing you say, I never had.
Well, it's not the Chamberlain or the Homebridge plugin's fault that when I tell Siri to open the garage door, she says, I have found garage repair people in your area.
It is if it's an unofficial plugin and it doesn't, like, if you were having that problem with something that was natively, you can sit there and do it all the time, Mr. Hackathon. You can sit there and say, this should work. Go to Apple and tell them you're having that problem. See what they tell you. It carries a little more weight when you have a certified product that works with it. Now, if it doesn't, then, you know, in your little Homebridge setup, hey, I have my wife's car so that I can crank it via Siri. Works most of the time. Sometimes it doesn't. Does that mean Siri sucks? No, it means I'm using an unauthorized plugin to do something it was not designed to do. And hey, it works, or great, it doesn't. But, you know, it's not Apple's fault for that. It's something that shouldn't even work in the first place, but it does most of the time. So if you had one that was natively supported and it didn't do it, right there with you. But as someone who's been doing this since 2014 with a combination of Homebridge and non-Homebridge stuff, because I can tell you with the Homebridge stuff and the Chamberlain, the MyQ stuff, they changed that API constantly. It was constantly breaking the plugin to the point that when they finally got a native Homebridge hub that you could add for like $50, I jumped on that thing and have never really had a problem since.
Well, there is a handful of times that it's like I'm having trouble communicating with the device and I'm like, okay, that's not your fault, Siri. But when she misunderstands open the garage to let me find garage repair people in your area, I'm like, no, that's a Siri problem.
Do you have it in the room garage inside of HomeKit?
Yes.
Okay. Is it called garage door inside of HomeKit? Because sometimes yes. It can be pedantic when it comes to semantics. So, you know, it depends. Does it fail 1 out of every 10 times or 5 out of every 10 times? I still say with the Homebridge thing, it's sort of hit and miss. But no, I understand where you're coming from. I mean, again, sometimes I have some HomeKit devices that work or don't or whatever. And, you know, every night when I turn off my, when I tell Siri goodnight and it goes through and shuts down the house, occasionally my garage light will say, you know, I didn't hear back from some of your secure devices or something like that. It could be a networking issue. It could be whatever. It works as well as it could be expected, but
it's all computers, just, you know, reboot it every few days and everything's fine.
Well, no, I know when the Homebridge plugins, I don't put as much stock behind them because they're not supposed to, you know, there's only as reliable as they can
right,
be.
Right, you're rolling your own at that point.
Yeah, when I use the Ring plugin, I can't record the video to HomeKit Secure Video as much as I would love to. So that's a problem for me that I have one camera in my house that I can't record even if I'd wanted to. Now, granted, I still have a subscription. It's in Ring service, but, you know, I want everything in one place, and they just can't pull that off. So I kind of get it. Especially when there's a company behind the scenes constantly tweaking the API to break stuff like this. And the Chamberlain people were notorious for this crap. Like, things would be working. I wouldn't update the plugin forever. And then all of a sudden, it couldn't do anything anymore. I don't know what you mean anymore with the plugin. So,
yeah, I've had to update the plugin twice because of that.
That I wouldn't put any stock in. When you try to do the stuff that's officially supported and it still fails, then you got an issue, I think. Then it's something you can complain about.
Right.
If you couldn't get support from it, out of it, then yeah, it's not worth complaining. You could take your hacked Switch that you have over there where you're playing all your arcade games, but if it starts to smoke and catch on fire,
I'll fix it on my own or it won't get fixed. It is what it is. Warranty hath been voided. But bringing it back home, do y'all have any other predictions for the 420 event? I think iPad Pros are pretty much a given. I think the mysterious AirTags are going to be a given. And much for Jim, I do think we're going to see a new Apple TV come out on Tuesday. I don't know that it'll be ready day of purchase, but I do think we're going to see a new Apple TV. It's been way too long.
I hope that we do, but I kind of tend to think that we won't. I think if we do, that'll probably be more towards the fall than this. Something just tells me that it's not going to be...
TV seems like it's more of a fall item, like it's a Christmas item.
Not just that, that's also probably when they will talk about the new shows that'll be coming out for Apple TV, because they want to save that for their flagship iPhone event, when you have the most eyes watching them. This feels almost like a should-have-been-a-press-release type of thing, where, you know, it's, we've known this was coming for so long, and then it's taken so long for this to happen that when it finally happens, it's probably not going to be that big a deal. I'm guessing the new Apple Pencil, you know, a third generation of that, iPad Pro, a given, maybe A14X, maybe, you know, it's going to be the mini LED. Honestly, at this point, I don't care what they announce with the iPad. I haven't had an iPad since October, and I've really been missing it
because mine is so screwed from 2017. I had Apple replace it. You know, this was all hard to coordinate from the ICU, by the way. And I'd get Apple to replace it. I would format it. It didn't work. It goes into this perpetual DFU loop that I can't get it out of. So I have missed having a tablet. Jason was gracious enough to loan me his while I was in the hospital for most of that time. So I did have an iPad that I could use. You know, media consumption when you can't leave bed is kind of a nice thing to have. It's the way you keep in touch with the rest of the world. So I'm pretty sure that come Tuesday, I'm going to try and snag an iPad, a pencil, and a keyboard, since I haven't upgraded in 4 years and I haven't been able to use it in close to a year. So I'm hopefully going to get something really good out of that. I think the iPads tend to be pretty future-proof. Like, that's why I didn't buy one in 2020, the little incremental upgrade they did, because it just didn't seem like a big enough of a change to be worth the investment. And that was when my iPad still worked. So this one is I have very high hopes for. The tracker, the AirTag, I think that's kind of neat, but I don't know how much that's going to really mean to me. I think the thing that I'm most likely to lose are iOS devices, AirPods, those types of things. It's not really, I don't lose my keys. I put them in the same place over and over and over. You know, it's pretty easy to find. The fact that they've certified a lot of things with Find My already, so that you can go and get third-party devices and they can be tracked automatically, is a nice touch. I think that'll help keep down the complaints from companies like Tile that are going to complain that this is anti-competitive or whatever it was that they tried to claim a year before this was even talked about. It might be nice to have on your luggage. I don't know. You know, maybe put those when you're going through the airport so, you know, you wouldn't lose something, I guess. Maybe I could see myself doing that if I'm ever traveling again. Yeah, so, I mean, there are some uses to that, but I'm not really excited for that. That wouldn't, even for a diehard like me, I wouldn't really care all that much about it because I already have it on the things that I know that I would be the most likely to lose and would be the most expensive things that I have. Like, I'm looking at you, AirPods Max. So yeah, I'm really more excited for the iPad announcement. And I hope they do upgrade the Apple Pencil, because since I haven't touched any of these things, I still have a first-gen Apple Pencil from 2017. I would probably like to go all in and get a new keyboard, get a new pencil, get a new iPad itself, and then keep it for another 4 or 5 years, because those things are pretty, they've proven themselves to be pretty, they're one of the devices, kind of like Macs, they age pretty well. Like, you can hold on to a Mac for 5 or 6 years and not even have any kind of a problem with it, depending on the type of work that you do. I'm sitting here recording this on a 2015, you know, iMac 5K, and it'll be 6 years old this year, and it suits my needs for what I use it for. So I think the same will be true with an iPad, and I honestly can't wait. I'll be, you know, with bated breath at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, getting ready to hit submit on some sort of order.
Jim, what do you think? What do you think they're going to release?
I think we're definitely in for the iPad, right? And the AirTag things, you know, I'm not too big on that.
You're a guy who already owns Tile stuff, though, too, don't you?
Well, yeah, but I don't even use those anymore, really. I mean,
the pandemic has killed the desire for a lot of this, I think.
Yeah, you don't leave the house, then everything's just here, you know. So I think they might actually announce like a second season for different shows, or a third season for we might get a little bit of that now, like just the announcement that, you know, like we're getting a second season of the morning show or whatever it's called, you know. They might have already announced that, but maybe I got to think that they're not going to do this without some sort of little tie-in to Apple TV Plus, because, you know, they've got to do that. And I think that just Apple Plus in general, I got to think that they got to give us something for Apple Plus just to keep talking about that, because they want that recurring revenue. So, you know, they might talk about Arcade, about how they just added a bunch of...
Oh, Apple One, you mean, not Apple Plus, Apple One.
Sorry, Apple One, yeah. So, you know, they might talk about Arcade a little bit, how they just added a bunch of the older games that, you know, you can play there now. I think somehow we've got to have that reoccurring revenue stream.
Services.
Talk. You know, something will be built in for that. Yeah, services, yeah.
Which, honestly, going back to our earlier conversation, is very important. With the whole games thing. So, like, I've avoided a lot of the games. I used to play games on my iPhone and iPad all the time. And as the industry moved towards microtransactions, it just became less less something that I was interested in, because I know me and I know my obsessive nature, and I know that if I'm stuck on a game and I can pay 99 cents to get around it or get a little upgrade or whatever, I'll probably do it. And I didn't need to waste money that way. So with Apple Arcade, I've been more inclined to go in because none of those games have microtransactions, you know, and they're all free to play. So the Fantasian game that came out, I've downloaded it. I'm looking forward to playing it. I do like the fact that they brought out like Cut the Rope and Fruit Ninja and stuff that I used to enjoy that I'll go and play again if it's free and there's no, you know, there's no in-game microtransactions. Why wouldn't I? So as the games start to get a little more complex and a little more, and I know you had sort of this we were sort of joking with you, Jim, because you were like, every game on the Apple Arcade is a block breaker. And it's like, well, that's far from true. And that hasn't been true for a long time, but I have wanted to see some of the complexity in these games improve, and it looks like that's starting to happen. So I hope Apple sticks with it. I hope they don't get rid of Arcade, and I hope they keep getting, you know, lure some of the, go the Epic route, pay some developers to take a big AAA title and make it exclusive to Apple Arcade. Like, just take the hit and make them do it. And I think that'll go a long way towards boosting the service.
I haven't played it hardly at all since like after the first week. Megan has played hours of Grindstone. So, I mean, hours of grind. I mean, she's like, she's already beat it all the way to the end, and now she's doing something different. I don't know. Yeah, but so you know, thank y'all for that. Like, I played it, and yeah, it's good, but it was right up her alley because she just, you know, she just likes stuff like that, just kind of mind out and just kind of click on it, you know. And so, yeah, she's really enjoyed Grindstone. So I got a win at home on that one.
Nice.
The Fantasian game, I really do want to try that out. But another game that's come out recently on Apple Arcade that, to your point, that I think Apple threw some money at them, is a game called Cozy Grove. And it's very, very Animal Crossing-esque. And the thing that I liked about the game, I haven't picked it up in a few days, is it's very much like an Animal Crossing in that you check in and you need to play it every day, but you're not sinking hours a day into it. You've got 20, maybe 25 minutes of play with it, and then the game will just tell you, you've done all you can for the day. Come back to the island tomorrow, and more stuff will be available, which is kind of nice. I like that. It's a really well-done game.
What was the name of that one again?
It's called Cozy Grove. Where I say that about the money...
That's fantasy baseball for me. You know, like, I can spend about 20 or 30 minutes a day,
exactly,
and then I'm done with it.
But the game actually premiered on Apple Arcade, and then just this week, I think this week or a couple days ago, it came out on Switch and PS4 and Xbox and PC. And I think it's like a $15 game on those platforms. But, you know, with Apple Arcade, I'm like, no, I'll play it on my iPad as opposed to playing it on, you know, buying it. And I hope the dev got a good deal for bringing it to the arcade. But it was a good way. Apple paid for the exclusivity to get the launch about a month, 3 weeks to a month ahead of time before it came out on other platforms.
And you know what? If I can play that on my Apple TV, now that would be a way that I would see Apple TV getting a refresh and getting some attention, is if they tie it back into Arcade. As I've said before, I think that is the future of Apple TV, is to position it as an inexpensive gaming device rather than a overpriced streaming device. Because, you know, your Xbox and PS4s and PS5s, and they all do streaming services. You can watch Netflix and Prime Video and YouTube. Nobody gets them for those purposes. They get them for games, and it's just something else you can do. So I think if they start to do that, that would be great. I need to look at this Cozy Grove and see. I just actually bought Animal Crossing for the first time a couple weeks ago, and I still haven't played it yet. So seeing something that I can play on the Apple TV, NBA 2K21, I know that's, I got that on my phone, and I can play that with the wonderful controller that I have. But I want to know can I play that on the Apple TV? I haven't even investigated yet. If I can, then I'll go fire up my SteelSeries controller and I will play that on the Apple TV, because why not?
Now, I thought that was a rule that if you're going to be in the arcade, it has to be TV compatible.
No idea.
No, I'm not sure about that. I mean, and some of them use controllers, some of them don't. I've been playing I forget the name of it, but it's like an old Pole Position type clone on the Apple TV with that new remote, and I love it.
A lot of those Need for Speed type games that are on there, I've had lots of those, and they're not bad at all, especially if you have a controller. I will never play a game with a remote unless it's like maybe Alto's Adventure or something like that. But I have never, even when that was, you were supposed to be able to do it either way, I went and got that SteelSeries controller right away, because it's like, this is not for me. If I can play it with a casual remote, it's probably not a good game. It's probably not, it would be a brick breaker game at that point. I want something where I need some precision with this. So not precision like I'm expecting to play Call of Duty, but hey, why not? Why not have some of those AAA titles that come to that? You know, Apple could afford it. They could definitely do it and not miss it. So, you know, we'll see. But I know we're coming up on an hour and a half here, so you're going to have a lot to edit this week, Josh.
Yeah, I'm down with it.
All right. Well, I think this is probably as good a place to stop as any.
Sounds good to me.
Works for me as well.
It's dinner time.
All right. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit InfiniteLoopBack.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at InfinLoopBack. That's at I-N-F-I-N LoopBack. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.